Yo, yo, yo.
I mean, you're terrible at basketball.
Chandler Parsons is 6'9 swinging, he can shoot the three.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast for Friday, February 13th, 2009. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports, and with me today are...
Evan Drexler, sports editor and football beat writer.
Kyle Maestri, baseball beat writer.
Jet lagged basketball beat writer, Mikey Ferdinando.
Phil Kegler, a.k.a. the only man who definitively told you that Florida would lose to Kentucky.
Bobby Colovey, baseball beat writer.
All right, and we're going to get right to the Kentucky-Florida talk.
Can I clear one thing up first? How are you jet lagged from 1 hour?
from 1 hour of what?
Was there a time zone change at all to Lexington?
No, it was multiple planes. It was four planes. It was four planes in 2 days.
And multiple planes doesn't change
do you know
time zones.
You know? Of jet lag.
It's I'm exhausted. That's all you need to know.
It's more of a figurative jet lag.
Yeah.
And while we're bagging on intros, Phil made it sound like the game wasn't even going to be close at all. So you're not getting any credit for that because Florida easily could have won
that game. Way Florida wins. They didn't win.
They had a chance to win that game.
I said
game.
100% Kentucky wins. They won.
All right. So clearly we're already getting into the Florida-Kentucky talk. Defer, just give us a quick scene what happened at the game.
Florida lost to Kentucky 68-65 in Rupp Arena last night. Nick Calathes had 33 points, but came up short in the very end. He had a chance to tie the game, 0.6 seconds left, and missed three free throws. Jody Meeks made an amazing three-point shot with 4.7 seconds left to win the game for Kentucky. So it was a tough loss for the Gators.
All right, let's go around and get some reaction on that. Kyle, how did you feel about the game?
Calathes was phenomenal. I think he really, on national television, proved he's one of the best players in the country and that he has nothing to work with on a day-to-day basis. And the shot he hit where he took the ball into the lane, got spun around, and flipped it up left-handed was one of the most amazing plays I've seen this college basketball season. And Jody Meeks kind of got lucky there. I don't know. I feel like he just threw it up and it happened to go in. But it was a great game.
All right, Mike, you were obviously there. What was Calathes like after the game?
He was pretty broken up about it. He was almost in tears, actually, after the game during his post-game press conference. He felt like he let the team down. But, this isn't on him. He had 33 points. Without him, they're not even in that position.
I got a question about that. You quoted him as saying that he felt like he let the team down. He's very open about that because that's the kind of guy he is. Did any of his teammates say they felt like they let Nick down? Because
no.
They did. No? Nobody said anything along those lines?
We didn't talk to any of the guys that probably really did let him down. We talked to Alex Tyes and Ray Shipman after the game, and neither of them had anything bad to say. I mean, Alex played well. He had 14 points, and Ray did well in his smallest defensive role, I guess. So we didn't talk to the Chandler Parsons and Dan Winters and Walter Hodges of the world, but...
Yeah, let's talk about them for a little while, because obviously they were just off on Tuesday night. I mean, what can they do to improve on that? Can they?
Make some shots. I mean, Dan was 0 for 4, or yeah, 1 for 5 or something. Chandler was 0 for 4. Walter was like 1 for 6. Walter, of course, got ejected at the technical flagrant foul when he stepped on Perry Stevenson.
Wait, is that Chandler Parsons, the 6'9 swingman who can shoot the three?
He still can shoot the three. He just didn't shoot the three last night.
He chose not to. He made a conscious decision not to shoot the three.
He saw well Nick was playing, so he figured, he's got it. No need for me to get into it.
I mean, I can't defend the way he played last night, but
I think Chandler thought, I don't want to be labeled as a shooter. I want to do the little things, like Dan.
Yeah, little things, but... If Nick Calathes is getting any kind of help at all, they could be so much better. And he's just not getting anything from anyone outside of maybe Alex Tyes, who played pretty well.
All right, let's get some more reaction about that. Bobby, you were not there, but I understand you have an opinion about the game, correct?
Barely, I mean. they've already covered it. Calathes dominated the game single-handedly. The play that Kyle talked about, if, you know, that not being in the top 10 is a shame. That was the best play of the game.
The Jody Meeks three-pointer, I mean, you were there. What kind of expectation, when he puts that shot up, were you thinking that shot even has a chance of going in?
I mean, they had it defended pretty much perfectly. Calathes touched the ball. He got a hand on
it. It looked like it on TV.
It was a lucky shot. I mean, it was a good shot, but... There's nothing more Florida could have done there.
And the crowd reaction after that shot?
It was unbelievable. I was sitting next to ESPN.com writer Pat Forty at the game, and he worked in Louisville, covered Kentucky and Louisville basketball for a really long time. And he was telling me that when Meeks made that shot, it's the loudest he's ever heard Rupp Arena. And that's a pretty strong opinion, I think. So it was nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to feel for a guy like Nick Calathes. I mean, I lost my Florida allegiances many years ago, but if you're a fan of the game of basketball.
Two?
Yeah, some people still have this room. anyway, if you like basketball, you can't not love Nick Calathes. One of the plays that really stuck out in my mind, he goes up for a layup, gets hacked, so he misses it. He steals the ball away from the Kentucky player, puts it back up, gets fouled, makes it despite the foul, and still doesn't get a foul call. But just his toughness fighting through, getting the ball back, and the circus shot. I mean, he did all he can do. You really hate to see a player like that, you know, have a shot to tie the game, push it overtime, and not come through.
How does this hurt them going forward to the rest of the SEC season and then, you know, eventually into the postseason?
Well, they obviously had a chance to separate themselves from the SEC East, get the 20 wins. They didn't do that. I mean, it's still pretty much all tied up now since that Kentucky's lost and Florida beat South Carolina and Florida lost. It's back to a three-way tie again. And they need to win. They need to win against Kentucky at home. They need to win against Tennessee at home. They got to get things done.
Is this weekend's game against Georgia going to help them? I mean, Georgia's clearly not the best team in the conference. So is this game going to help them all, you know, because they're expected to win this game by a sizable amount?
Absolutely. And they need to win by a sizable amount. They need to get out and play well and kind of get rid of the demons from this last game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that comes to my mind more so than, like, just wins and where it puts them in the standing is a mental standpoint. Like, coming off, you know, they gave up that game to South Carolina a little while ago. They almost lost to South Carolina at home. And, you know, now they lose to Kentucky. From a mental standpoint, where do we think Florida's going to rebound from this?
I think they're fine. I think they did great on the road in Rupp Arena. I mean, they took it down to the wire. They had a chance to win. What's that?
They did great on the
Florida.
Road.
You mean Calathes?
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, I last I checked, there weren't just 33 points on the scoreboard at the end of that game. So
as you said last week, it's a team.
I'll loosely refer to them as a team, if that's okay, for the purposes of this podcast.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think, you know, as a team, that you can't hope for much more than that. Like I said, the road's really tough, especially in SEC play. When they, you know, they'll get a chance to play Kentucky again at home, and that's if they don't take care of business then, that's when it really becomes a problem. And I also wanted to talk about the Hodge ejection with everybody, especially D for who was there, because on TV, we saw him step on his arm. Then we saw him immediately go down, try to give him a hand up, say, I'm sorry. Then even after that, seek him out again, Perry Stevenson, make sure he said he was sorry. It looks like Perry kind of gave him a high five, said it's okay, you know, whatever it was. So it didn't look intentional at all. Did you think it was intentional when it happened in real time? And do you think he should have been thrown out?
Well, we didn't have the benefit of the replay at the stadium like you guys did at home. I didn't think it was that big of a deal when it happened. I thought he just kind of stumbled over to him and said he was sorry. But I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I think it probably should have been a foul, a technical, but he shouldn't have got thrown out by any means.
All right. This is a question we haven't talked about before. Do you think this team is better than last year's Florida basketball team?
No. I mean, last year I had Maurice Spates. There's no Maurice Spates on this team.
Yeah, there is. It's Nick Calathes now, though. Like, he's making up the ground they lost because he's a better player this year than he was last year. And I think they are better this year than they were last year just based on, you know, Chandler Parsons is slightly better than last year's Chandler Parsons. Dan Werner is slightly better than last year's Dan Werner. And, I think if they can just finally commit to defense, that's really the key to this team. They might be able to do something.
Right. I mean, that it's going to come down to defense. And, like, everybody is a year older. For me, in my mind, you know, I don't think I am on record for saying I think they'll be one of the last four teams out or in of the tournament. But I think this team would go either further than the NIT, you know, make the semifinals or win, but they made some fun, or they'll make it to the NCAA tournament, which is further than last year's.
All right, and let's talk about Rupp Arena. You mentioned it before, the environment great, the fans great. How does it compare to Thompson Bowling, which we just heralded with praise last week?
I mean, Thompson Bowling was hard to top, but Rupp did it. It was great. There was 25,000 fans. They were loud the entire game. There was no lull. Even when Kentucky struggled a bit, they were loud. The place erupted when Meeks hit that shot. I've never been in a game with the kind of noise that was made right then, and it was unbelievable.
And what was it after the game you said about the fans sticking around?
After the game, I was walking around trying to find my way out of the stadium to get a cab, and I noticed that there was still a bunch of fans sitting on the court. I was wondering what was going on. I thought maybe there's a free t-shirt contest or something. So I go out there, and there's a couple thousand, 1,500, 2,000 fans sitting there listening to Billy Gillespie's press conference. not press conference, a radio show. And I couldn't believe that. They're sitting there like an hour after the game listening to his radio show. I mean, in Florida, most of the fans are out before Donovan even sits down to do his. So I thought that said volumes about their fan.
And Phil, what was it we saw today about the attendance at Florida basketball games? It's down for the lowest since, when was that?
Like 5 years ago, I want to say. This is the lowest this year. I don't remember the exact figures. It's down about on average 1,500 this year from the second year that they won the championship.
All right.
And there was an email sent out today. Gator Zone posted that there are still men's basketball tickets available for the remainder of the season. Most games are not sold out, and they, I mean, it's very clear that this team is not selling the way they had hoped it would, and that. There's just not enough interest there in the Gainesville area to sell out those seats.
Right, and I mean that includes games, the home games against Tennessee and Kentucky, both games, of which are going to be big games, televised games.
Games you would think should be sold out.
Right, I mean I'm sure at this point in past seasons, tickets have not been available.
The problem is obviously deep rooted with fans not showing up for games right now. But has this team really been marketed well by the university? I feel like. The 04s were all over TV, all over different advertising type things. The football team certainly is. You know, you used to get our favorite Billy Donovan commercial to make fun of, the Be a Champion for Babies commercial. And I haven't seen stuff like that going on with this team. I haven't seen a guy like Chandler Parsons, who I think, maybe can't be their number two scoring option. He could definitely be the voice of the team. He's a great talker. Everybody likes listening to him. I don't feel like they're well publicized. I don't know how you guys feel.
Do you think they are marketable, though?
Yeah, I think they're definitely marketable players. I think Chandler's real marketable. Calathus is one of the best athletes at the school. Irv's got a fan appeal to him. Everybody seems to love him.
They certainly don't have a personality, though, like Joe Kim Noah, representative, or even Corey Brewer, Al Horford of years ago.
Well, I think Kyle's right. I think Chandler Parsons could be that kind of guy. He's very personal. He's a good talker. I think in that situation, he would do real well. I just don't think he was given the opportunity.
Does anybody know that outside of the people covering them day to day, though? Like, does the audience at large?
I don't think so, because going back to what Kyle said, I don't think they put him out there enough.
All right, anything else about basketball? We're moving on here. All right, let's talk about softball. UF rebounded from its Sunday 1-0 loss with an 11-0 victory tonight against Jacksonville. Stephanie Brombacher pitched 6 innings because they mercy ruled the Dolphins. 2 hits, struck out 8 people, walked nobody. The offense was dominant. Kyle, what do you like out of this team coming forward?
Well, if I have a quick question, there's a mercy rule in college softball?
You covered the World Series with me.
I realize that. Why is there a mercy rule in major college sports?
Because
there shouldn't be a mercy.
Teams 100-0.
Then that should happen.
No mercy.
I think Deeper has a point.
This isn't like high school or like little league. I mean, like, come on, you can't be mercy.
I think here's what it actually.
We're all getting trophies now.
Here's what it actually is for. It's for the doubleheaders. I think they play so many doubleheaders where if a team's getting the. Beat out of them. I'm going to censor myself here so Adam doesn't have to do it later. In the first game, they don't have to extend that game to go 2.5 hours when you have to play another one right afterwards. So I think that's why the rule exists. College softball plays twice a day every weekend. So,
do you think that there's a bigger disparity between really good teams and really bad teams in softball as opposed to maybe basketball or no?
Absolutely not. Are you telling me a football team playing a 1AA school isn't a huge talent disparity? I mean, Florida could be some of the teams they have on the schedule next year, 80-0 if they tried to. So, no, I don't think there's any more of a gap.
Might be able to do it if they don't try.
Yeah. Or if they don't try to.
All right, well, let's get back to talking about the game that was tonight. The offense went off, scored 11 runs, 8 of which came in the 6th inning alone. Kyle, the player you talked about last podcast, Aja Pakuba, went off tonight.
Went 3-for-3. That's right. Come here for your softball information. But, Aja's a great player. I'm glad to see her doing well because she just has such an amazing swing. And I know you got to talk to the players after the game. What did they have to say? What did they think?
Honestly, they basically said they didn't change anything from the last time. Coach Walton said something amusing, though, that in the 2 games they've done well offensively, they didn't face Whitney Canyon of Baylor. And then in the 2 games they did poorly, obviously they did. So, I mean, I don't think the team's going to change anything that much. I mean, they're good hitters, obviously. They got so far last year. They haven't made a whole lot of changes in the lineup, despite the promised change from Megan Bush to possibly more Lynette Franklin.
was the lack of offense in those two games as simple as facing Canyon?
I think so.
Is that it?
I think so. It's like we said last time. She had a .07 ERA. She might be one of the best pitchers in the country. So.
Yeah, it's tough to tell because this is her first season, so she's got all of three games under her belt, whatever she's pitched. But yeah, she looked that good.
So the norm to expect from this Gators offense should be what we've seen in the games not against Canyon.
I wouldn't say the norm because they will face better pitchers once they get into
SEC. 11 runs a game shouldn't be expected, but we should see, you know, 5 runs, 6 runs a game as opposed to the one or no runs a game.
Yeah, it's like Coach Walton said after the game, it's a disappointment when they don't hit home runs, you know, when they don't hit well.
But how much of this is just waiting to get into midseason form and building confidence kind of?
I don't think much because I actually thought about that and I went back and looked at their start to last season because I wanted to check myself, and they got off to a real quick start last season. It's just that they were playing the Jacksonvilles and they were playing USF and teams like that. Sorry, Phil, but like they were playing lesser competition. They scored, I think, like 19 runs in their first three games as opposed to 10 or 11 that they got this last weekend. So.
I mean, you know, when they scheduled Baylor, there's probably no way they could have expected to see that type of pitching since she's a freshman. Do you think it's going to help them kind of seeing this type of pitching this early instead of, you know, halfway into the season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think at the very least, it'll kind of bring them down to earth that we're not going to score 10 runs a game every time. They're going to have that in the back of their mind right from the beginning, which is probably a good thing for them. But I do think it's as simple as the Whitney Canyon quote, you know, we didn't face Whitney Canyon, so we did real well. I think she's going to end up being a great pitcher by the end of the season, and the stats will back that up.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of great pitching, Florida has two pitchers that Walton talked about a lot in his press conference this week, both Brombacher, who pitched tonight, or Wednesday night, sorry about that, and Stacy Nelson, who's obviously the reigning SEC Pitcher of the Year. They'll both, I think, see substantial time this weekend when they play 5 games in 3 days. You obviously saw Stacy and Stephanie Brombacher all last season. What do you think about how they'll develop this year?
I mean, we talked about Stephanie before we started recording the podcast, and I think Stacy is still going to carry. She's still going to pitch 300 innings. Like, she will still carry the load for them, and Brombacher will match up with the number two. I don't think it's ever going to be a time where it's the third game of a series and the ball gets into Stephanie's hands for the start. I just don't see that happening. And, you know, she didn't lose a game last year. We saw that her record was undefeated. She was 19-0, I believe.
And 20-0.
20-0, and she's 2-0 now. And I said I'd set the over-under at half a game for her to lose this season. And that's a serious over-under, so I don't know what you guys think about that. But certainly had I said that at the beginning of last year, everyone would have laughed and she would have went under. But I think I would go under half a game here because they hit, you know, less second-tier pitching, which is what she's matching up against, and she always has huge run support.
Does anybody have any opinion on the over-under half of?
I mean, I guess I'll go over just for the sake that one game could happen anywhere. My question would be, do you think it's any hindrance that she's not getting more developed while, you know, Stacy's still here, or is she just going to be fine stepping in?
No, I think she is getting developed. Yeah, she gets to go against LSU and Alabama and all those schools. It's just it's not their number one starter that's opposite her. So she's still facing the same quality of hitters. It's just that her mistakes aren't under a microscope because they get erased by the next two-run home run that Anaya hits or Pakulba hits or players like that. So I think it's good for her to – she had some rough outings last year, but she didn't get lost because Stacy would come in and finish off the game or the offense would erase her mistakes.
You know, obviously if they lose Stacy Nelson to injury or something, it's a huge loss. But do you think Brombacher would be able to carry that load, or do you think she's not quite ready for that?
It's really tough to say because – not only would she have to slide into the number one role, but somebody would have to slide into the number two role. You know, somebody would have to replace Stephanie Brombacher, and I think Kelsey Reuter would be their number three right now, and she's hitting, and I don't know if she could handle that every day, and she's certainly not the same caliber that they are. But I think Stephanie is good enough to be a number one for sure going forward, and she'll be great by the end of her career here.
Yeah, she's the future of the program, is what Walton and Stacy Nelson herself have said. All right, anything else on softball before we move on to our final topic? All right, well, this is something. I got an email from Phil earlier today about the Mount Rushmore of Florida sports, the state of Florida specifically. We're going to change that up here. We're going to talk about the Mount Rushmore of University Florida sports, the top five players in UF history.
Mount Rushmore has four people on it.
We're changing it up a little bit.
So we don't get sued by the thousands of ESPN execs listening to this podcast.
Oh, so
let's just say that we got it from ESPN, who was doing a statewide one, and I saw one for the Mount Rushmore of dunkers, and they had five guys. So that's where we're getting this concept from. But.
All right, so does anybody want to start off? Who absolutely belongs on that?
I mean, the three Heisman winners, Danny Werfel, Steve Spurrier, Tim Tebow, they all have to be on it. I mean, just Danny Werfel and Tim Tebow's following while they're here has just been insane. And even now, Werfel is, you know, a legend around here. And, I obviously I wasn't around when Spurrier was playing, but, you know, just him as a coach, he's got to be there.
I don't know if anyone will agree with me on this, but I think a lot of consideration has to be given to athletic director Jeremy Foley. I mean, Kyle's not, obviously he's not making it out. He's not, but I mean, he's picking coaches. Like, they, like, turn to gold. He, like, touches them, and they become great coaches.
You guys make fun of Phil for this all the time, but I'm honestly going to agree with him on this one. I mean, Jeremy Foley's putting all this together. Without Jeremy Foley, there'd be no Urban Meyer. I mean,
like, Urban Meyer would cease to exist without Jeremy Foley? Because you give me the budget Jeremy Foley has to work with, and I'll pick a couple up-and-coming coaches away from other programs, too. I mean, I think it's – I respect Jeremy Foley for what he does. If we were doing a Mount Rushmore of athletic directors, we could talk about him being on there. But that is absolutely absurd. When people think of Florida athletics outside of maybe this room, I was going to say Gainesville, nobody's talking about Jeremy Foley.
Absolutely.
You have to remember he also plucked up Ron Zook. So that's a legendary coach in the making.
He corrected his mistake. He said goodbye to Ron Zook and brought in Urban Meyer.
Well, I mean – Jeremy Foley's not even an athlete.
Right? Okay, so pointed that one out.
Not only limited right, to athletes,
so
obviously.
If we've established the three Heisman guys are on there.
Have we established
no,
that?
Do we
no,
all
we
agree
have,
on that?
I
mean,
no,
you know, you're not gonna
who doesn't get on?
Well, we got five. And so I don't know. I don't wanna be so quick to put three people on there right away.
Can we honestly say Tebow's on it?
Yes,
Tebow's on it.
I'm just
Spurrier has to be
Spurrier,
on there.
I think Spurrier, yes.
And Danny Werfel can't?
No,
how
yeah.
Is Danny Werfel? I mean, if you ask anyone in America what they know about Florida athletics, they're probably going to name those three players. And obviously the 04s now.
I just worry we're giving too much credit to football and not like looking at the broader spectrum. I understand that football is the biggest sport here, and I'm not debating that, but I don't know.
Wait, let me clarify here. So we're saying Mount Rushmore is defined as what other people see UF as?
No, it's what defines UF sports, which is going to be defining to someone, obviously.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, it's close to that, but I think it's what defines UF sports to everyone and to the program itself.
Okay, mm-hmm. Where does Urban Meyer come into this conversation? Has he reached Mount Rushmore status yet?
He's got a few more years to go. He's right on the edge. He's
two national.
He's knocking on their doors, but he's got to have a little bit.
You gonna put Billy Donovan on there?
Yeah, that was the next name.
I think
Billy Donovan built a program. Urban Meyer inherited a program.
I think Donovan trumps Meyer if we're talking coaches right now. And Meyer, you know, 5 years from now, if they've got two more titles, then yeah, we're gonna have to start talking about that. But I think right now he's only been here 4 or 5 years. 4 years.
This is his fourth year.
Okay, so he's completed 4 years here, and I just think that's not enough time to put him on there.
So okay, we can agree. But it's enough time to put Tebow on there.
Yeah, yes. Because players only get, you know, 4 years, and he's done about everything you can do as a player. So.
And only three.
And people are getting tired of Tebow.
That,
he hasn't even left.
Okay, so if players only get 3-4 years, where do we stand on the class of 04s? Of Joe Kim Noah, Corey Brewer, Al Horford, Torian Green, and Lee Humphrey to a lesser extent.
I think you got
to
include Lee Humphrey in there, but I think they share a spot. I'm not sure how you're going to divide that.
No, you can't share a spot. That's
why can't they share a spot?
We can't.
You're going to single out one of those guys.
That's what I'm saying. That's the trouble. That's the hard thing.
I would put Noah on it because he's the face of the 04s. When people think 04s, they think Joe Kim Noah. So I think. Although you would like to put all of them in one category, since you're only going to have to pick one, you pick the face of them.
And just have him represent the entire class.
So we noticed that we're very, except for Werfel and Spurrier, very current based.
Right.
Or like very recently based.
That's a problem.
I mean, is that a worry at all when we're thinking like Emmitt Smith, like nobody cares?
I like them as my fifth guy.
I think
Taylor.
No, I think Emmitt definitely jumps in the conversation, but I mean, we're following the titles, to be honest. So I mean, Florida wasn't winning a bunch of titles before the last, you know, 15 years, so that's just how this is going to probably play out.
I was going to say we can agree that the best days of UF sports have been in the most recent decade or
the
so,
last
right?
The last 2 decades, but yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we're looking toward that era then for players.
I mean, we also got to start thinking about some of the smaller sports. You know, they've also had a lot of success here.
Well, if we're saying that it's how we're defining UF to the nation, then we're not going to pick somebody from a smaller sport.
Well,
But Ryan Lochte, I think, absolutely gets in that conversation because he's a swim guy, so he's from a smaller sport. Probably wasn't publicized all that much when he was here, but he steps on the international stage. He wins a couple gold medals, and now we definitely have to talk about
him. What about someone like Dara Torres then?
Dara Torres, I think, is another good one to consider.
Abby Wambach, mm-hmm. Led them to a national title. Best player in U.S. approaching best player in U.S. women's soccer history. So she's got to be at least in consideration.
Well, I like Wambach before I like either of the swimmers, because what did those guys do while they were here? I mean, they won, I'm sure, but you're basing all that on what they've done since they've left Florida. And this is the Mount Rushmore U.S. sport.
Is that like saying David Eckstein because he won a World Series with the Cardinals and the Angels? Is that right.
It's the same thing.
I think that's a really fair point that Deeper's making. I mean, I think that their Olympic thing should be considered, absolutely, but the fact that Wambach won a title while she was here is huge, and I think...
And that puts her above the swimmers.
I would put her above
the swimmers. She's on the top of pretty much every, goals in a game, goals in a season, goals in a career. She's on top of all of it. She's the face of women's soccer.
So for our Mount Rushmore discussion, is winning a national championship, is that a prerequisite? Because that seems like what we're getting to.
If you're in a smaller sport, I feel as though you got to, because no one's going to have that recognition of you unless you've hit that national stage, and the national stage is winning a national championship.
We completely exclude the swimmers and maybe someone like Mary Wise, who's been here for 17, 18 years. She's never won a national title, but, I mean, she has longer tenure than any of them as far as the coaches go.
But outside the volleyball world,
right? No,
no one knows who Mary Wise is.
I'm giving examples of people we're discluding for reasons of not winning a national title.
You can't base something solely on tenure, though, just for being here.
No, 17, 18 straight SEC titles. I mean, there's championships there. There's just not national
championships.
She's
in a discussion, but she's not getting on.
Okay.
Yeah,
she's below Foley.
I think it's
fair. Who isn't below Foley at this point?
I think it's fair to mention Mary Wise, but yeah, I think titles... titles are something that's transcendent, where people who don't follow soccer might know Abby Wambach won a title at Florida or, something like that. It's something where it becomes a bigger picture. It's giving the school publicity, whereas somebody who's putting up big numbers or doing great things but not getting on the national scene, the international scene, they're not defining the program necessarily.
I gotta go back to Bobby's joke of Noah thing. I'm not all for putting Noah ahead of all the other guys on the Mount Rushmore. Hit the table. I mean, if you're gonna do that, you might as well put Donovan up there and have him represent
okay.
the whole program.
That's fine.
I think we were already saying Billy was on there.
The one person me and Kyle actually talked about from the basketball program is Mike Miller. I mean, he really kind of was the face, really brought them to the national stage with his game-winning shot in the second round of 2001, I think it was. 2000. And then leading the team to a national championship appearance, although they did lose, he really did bring them to the national attention.
Yes, but again, the Miller is going to get disqualified by our automatic prerequisite of no national title.
He's in a bigger sport, so he can have the success without winning a national championship.
I thought we just established national championship as a prerequisite for the.
I said for smaller sports.
I don't think it's a prerequisite, but if we're keeping score, it'd be plus 50. It'd be highly weighted, and I think. What we were talking about with Mike Miller, too, is the 04s were such a great team and everybody contributed greatly, but can we say any one of them were a better basketball player than Mike Miller while he was here? I'm not so sure. I think Mike Miller might have been the best player while he was here and then went on to a very successful NBA career also. So I don't know, but then also getting back to Deefer's point, I don't think we can lump them all into one and chisel, four heads into one head whatever we're trying to do here. And I think you have to pick a guy, and if I was going to pick a guy, I would also pick Noah, not because I think he was the best player, which maybe we're seeing in the NBA now, but I think he really defined what that class was all about.
You know what he was? He was the face of the program.
That's the face. All right, so we really need to start building them down, though, because... We've named, I think, close to a dozen people, and we really need five people.
Let's go around. Let's get one person from everybody.
Let's just get the the Tebows and the Spurrier. Let's just assume those two.
Okay, so everyone's two.
Everybody's two.
Okay, so we have
your other three.
Okay,
go ahead. Vote your other three, Evan.
Me? Oh man, you got to go with me first. Oh man, after all this discussion, you got to go with Billy D. And then I actually like the Abby Wambach argument. I'm gonna go with soccer, Abby, and then Give some credit to Werfel, even though I spoke against him at first. Go with Danny Werfel as my fifth.
I'm actually going to completely agree with that. I'm going Wambach. I'm going Donovan. I'm going Werfel. And the reason I'm not going Emmett Smith is because I think if you guys think about this, how many people are huge, like, NFL fans, everybody knows who Emmitt Smith is. How many people would be surprised to learn that Emmitt Smith went to UF?
When I came as a freshman, I was surprised to learn that Emmitt
Smith went to UF. I think there are a lot of people out there. I don't think he's necessarily associated directly with the program. He's a Dallas Cowboy. No. Everybody knows him as an NFL guy. But I think there are a lot of people out there who are sports fans, maybe not diehard sports fans, but definitely sports fans who wouldn't know he went to UF.
Excellent point.
All right, so we have the same three from you guys. Deeper?
I hate to do this. I'm going to have to agree. Bobby won me over with Abby.
And then Werfel and
Phil. Who are the faces of the program?
I'll be sure to disagree. I hate to not give a lot of love to smaller sports because I really like the smaller sports here at UF. But my three, I'm going to go with Billy D, Werfel, and Foley. You guys think I'm absurd.
I don't think you're absurd,
I think Foley is a big indicator of the era of athletics right here at UF.
I thought he was going to go with DeLisha Milton Jones. For those of you who don't know, former Wolves player, won a couple gold medals. So.
Yeah, nobody knows who she is. So.
I'm sure all the coaches will definitely put Jeremy Foley on their Mount Rushmore. But my three, of course, is Abby Wambach, Danny Werfel, and Billy Donovan. I don't think we actually talked about any baseball players, really. I mean, David Eckstein was briefly mentioned, but Brad Wilkerson did everything while I was here. I still don't think he's on the Mount Rushmore, but he at least deserves a mention in this.
Yep.
And so does Matt LaPorta, who just dominated while he was here.
Yeah, I think we messed up by not mentioning Brad Wilkerson. Me and Bob talked about that before, and he pitched here as well as being a great hitter here and led them to the College World Series while he was here. They didn't win, but I mean, he was also a really good player. I wouldn't put him above the three we chose or the five we chose, but I'm glad he got in the conversation.
I'm surprised we completely forgot about him and just the baseball team in general and that brief David X I mentioned. The baseball team had a couple good years back, '04.
All right, but we have our five, with the exception of the people Phil mentioned.
Phil's clearly been
so
trumped here.
He clearly is working his way into the athletic program, trying to get a job.
I know he plays the role of moderator during these podcasts, but we need a top five from Adam.
Yeah, give it to us.
All right, well, we're good with Tebow and Spurrier.
Right, Tebow and Spurrier, yeah.
I would also go with Werfel and Donovan. And I think Bobby won me over without me.
Oh, man. I just dominated that one.
When you talk about defining the athletic program to the people out there, I mean, somebody who's represented our country as well.
So of the six of us in the room, five of us are going with Tebow, Spurrier, Wambach, Donovan, and Werfel. And then Phil gets Foley in there. I like
Foley. So we agree on
Phil.
Four of them.
Yeah,
which is pretty good.
All right, we just had some technical difficulties there. We had just wrapped up our historical Mount Rushmore debate about UF sports when our ever-reliable MacBook GarageBand cut out right before we got into an engaging, interesting conversation, thought-provoking piece about the current UF athletes we would put on that Mount Rushmore. So let's go back around. Let's agree who absolutely should be on it. Who do we like?
I mean, we got to start off by, saying coaches can't be on it. You're just going to be players, just athletes.
Yeah, the point about coaches is that they're operating on a different scale than the players because the players only have 3 or 4 year careers, whereas the coaches are operating off of 15 years. Their body of work is much bigger, and they're going to end up on the list too many times, I think.
So we're going strictly on players, and we're going strictly on players who are currently playing for
Percy Harvin.
UF is over, he's ineligible for this discussion.
Okay, so Percy Harvin cannot count, for example. So it has to be someone who's playing actively. And I think, we can all agree on at least two or three. I mean, Tim Tebow still playing, Brandon Spike still playing, and Stacey Nelson, I'm pretty sure we can all agree on.
And Nick
Kalaitis. And Nick Kalaitis. Is everyone okay with Kalaitis?
Yeah,
and
I think we got
Nelson and Tebow and Spikes.
We got those four.
So we got those four.
So we got one each.
All right. Now let's just throw around some names real quick. Who do we want to have in this discussion?
Well, I think Elise Cusack for the volleyball team absolutely is in this discussion. She's the best player on a really great team that wins the SEC every year and goes into the postseason. So throw her name out there for sure.
I agree with Cusack. I think you also need to throw Kelly Murphy in that conversation. She's a freshman, but he's probably the best player on the volleyball team. Probably better than Cusack, or at least will be.
I mean, she's going to be the greatest Florida volleyball player of all time.
I think it's too early to put her on something like this. But yeah, by the time she's done here, I think she will be the best volleyball player in UF history.
I'm also going to throw out Billy Horschel, fine golfer.
Maybe the best ever.
Can you tell me any stats about Billy? Can you tell me the name of the award he would win? Thank you. Anyway, I'm going to transition over to Shea Brooks for women's basketball.
Phil J. Mariotti Kegler. Tossing colleagues under the bus.
Hey, I have a job, though.
taking shots at J. Mariotti. Guys, he listens to this.
I was going
to
say, when J. Mariotti's agent listens to this show, he's going to be so angry. All right, keep going, Phil.
You gotta give Brooks credit. She's really carrying the team. 29 points against Tennessee. You know, some people may make the argument that she hasn't done enough on a national stage. They're in the AP top 10, coming in at number 9 this week. They could be number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. They're doing great. They're tied atop the SEC. I think they'll go far. Brooks is a big reason why.
The people I really like that are here now is Lori Beth Gunther. She's a swimmer. She's won a bunch of awards, apparently, from what I've heard.
I don't know the specific awards, so don't start even trying to call me out.
Not admissible in Rushmore discussion.
Lauren Hyde is a defender for the soccer team. She'll be a senior next year. She's been selected as an All-American, I think, 2 or 3 times. Always All-SEC. She's doesn't put up the stats because she's in the back, but without her, that defense falls apart.
Hold on, any gymnasts? Maybe Melanie Sinclair, anybody?
I would put Melanie Sinclair up there. I mean, you can talk about Corey Hartong. But Melanie Sinclair has just, each year she's winning All-Americans and she's posted 310, so she's up in the record books.
Is there room for any baseball players in this discussion? I mean, Brandon McArthur's been on the team for 6 years. I know he hasn't played all six years of his career. He's had some injuries, but I mean, is there a place for someone like him who's, you know, kind of the face of the team?
I don't think there's anybody on the baseball team that we can put on this Mount Rushmore that we're building here. I don't think anybody's done enough. Their stats haven't been good enough, and they haven't done anything on a bigger scale to elevate the team and kind of be that transcendent face of the program. So
I mean, McArthur's a great story. He's a real tearjerker.
That's why I'm getting out of the business.
What about someone else from the softball team? And we always say that, you know, Stephanie Brombacher is so amazing.
Stacey
Nose. I know. Okay. Stacey Nose. I got it here.
Oh. I didn't know.
We always say Stephanie Brombacher is so amazing. Is there any room for? I know she's, you know, always supplanted by Stacey Nelson because Stacey Nelson's the one pitcher. Is there room to put two softball
pitchers? If you go
on
with
Anwa,
it's got to be Kim Balzonia. Right?
Yeah. If we're gonna go with another softball player,
which we're
it's
not.
It's got. I agree with Phil. It's gonna be Kim because she was their first All-American position player ever. When she's done, she's gonna have a record for most at bats, most games played. She's going to have a stolen base record, most runs most likely scored. So, I mean, I think she would definitely be. She's top 3 in batting average. So, she'd be definitely the one to look at. Stephanie Brombacher's pitched in 30 career games. It's way too early.
Right. But going off of what Evan said, like, 2 years from now when we're having this, or when other people are having this discussion, I think Brombacher's on there in the place of Nelson.
Right next
to Kelly
Murphy.
Next to Kelly Murphy, absolutely.
I really hope I'm not still here in 2 years.
John Brantley.
No. If you're going to go anywhere from football team, you're going to look at Janoris Jenkins. Might go down as the best cornerback that's played at Florida.
Muck City.
All right, do we have any other smaller sport athletes we want to agree with? Can I give a cross-country shout-out to Jeremy
Cristiani? Why not?
All-American?
Go for it.
Top 20?
Shine on, you crazy star.
All right, well, I just did. All right, let's go around the room. Let's get that one person from everybody.
I'm a little biased because I covered the volleyball team first semester, but, I mean, you got to go with Elise Cusack. And she leads this team. She day in and day out. I really like her a lot.
Yeah, and for the purposes of full disclosure, I too covered the volleyball team, but I'm also going with Cusack because I think she's the best player on a really good team. She's won a lot of awards, and I think the Shea Brooks thing is, like Phil said, for me. She hasn't made enough noise on the national scale, and she's really just now bringing them into the SEC picture. I think it's like a knee-jerk reaction, like, oh my God, they've won all these games this year, and they just beat a really, really down Tennessee team, so we're going to put her up there, but I can't go with that.
Brandon McArthur has had a Tate Casey like staying.
If Brandon McArthur is much better than Tate Casey. I don't want Tate Casey getting any love.
Regardless, I'm going to go with Elise Cusack. She's the best player on a really good team.
I'm gonna stick with Brooks over here. If with full disclosure, I covered the volleyball and women's basketball teams. So
you learned nothing.
I'm great with comparison.
I know I'm gonna take some stuff for this one, but I also put out the disclaimer. I covered the women's basketball game for the team for one game. So I'm gonna go with Shea Brooks. It's kind of going on a projection, saying that she's actually gonna lead this team to not a national title, but at least a good run into the tournament. So
Phil is pumping his fist in triumph right now as he's swayed Bobby to his side.
Hey, man, I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
That's what why I'm getting out of the business.
What does that mean, Phil? All
right, I'm going to cast the final vote for Elise Cusack. Like you guys said, she's a great player on a really great team. And I guess the majority wins here.
I mean, this is America, isn't it?
Oh, this is so contrived.
Can you get me out of here, all right?
It's 100 degrees in this room. Just let everybody out there listening. Yeah.
This is why I'm getting out of the business.
It's 100 degrees, and this is the second time we've had this exact same conversation. So I think we are, like Phil requested, going to get out of here.
I'm pretty sure, though, the great player and a great team was actually on the first run. We didn't say it the second time through.
No, that's good. Get some new stuff in there. That's
some original thinking.
Original thought. All right, so if you have any thoughts on this, first of all, if you made it through this 40-minute podcast and have any thoughts on it, send any feedback to sports@alligator.org or comment on one of our blogs. And with that, we're out.
Wait, nope. We're going to go without any Red Wings discussion?
No.
Oh, all right, man.
Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg are phenomenal, and Marion Hossa has been the greatest pickup for them.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, it's time.
Go Flacos.
We're out.